Today, you have in front of you a very, very succinct source sheet, because I wanted, instead of studying a lot of sources inside, I'll share them bal peh, but I wanted to talk about a topic which is a complicated topic. It's not an easy topic to discuss, and for many of us, this topic is very personal. We've been on different sides of this topic, but I think it's worthy to consider it, to look at it closely, to think about it in light of the words of Chazal, and figure out how do we internalize it, how is it relevant for our lives today, which is more complex perhaps than it ever was. And that is this question, as you'll see in terms of the title of Good Judgment, which is going to have multiple layers of meaning. The world is a complex place today. I would say, in a certain sense, it's more complex than it ever was, and it's in a specific way, in a specific aspect. And that has to do with boundaries and lines and identities. Now, you turn on the news, and you're not even sure today how to define someone's identity. You know, there's a whole legal battle going on today about restrooms and how people identify themselves, which is complicated. You have people who come to shul, and they're trying to figure out how they identify themselves and how we identify with them. You have a lot of people with different religious identities, but today it's become even more complex than that. You have today people who say they are, and you fill in the blank, they are Orthodox. Well, what does that mean? That people say, oh, thanks so much. They say that they're Orthodox. What does that even mean? How do you define? How do we define, and how do we define it for somebody else? So these questions are real questions. They're going on all the time in our families and in our communities. So we're thinking about how do we address them, and the first thing that comes to mind is like, okay, step back for a second. It's not your business. It's not your business to judge somebody else. Whatever their decisions are, whatever their identities are, whatever their issues are, who is it for me to judge them? So which is one way of thinking about it. But the truth is that we all know that that's not really even possible, because we are judging people all the time. Every time we see somebody walking down the street, in the back of our mind, whether we like it or not, we're judging them based on how they act, how they dress, how they present themselves. So you could say, you know, that's all wrong. It's totally inappropriate, but maybe it's not. Maybe we're hardwired for that. Maybe there's something important about that. And if it is true that we're doing that all the time, so then how do we navigate that? Should we or shouldn't we? And if we should, how should we? You know, being judgmental or judging others, you know, immediately it evokes this kind of like visceral, no, of course we don't judge other people. Of course we do. We do all the time. Chazal were very acutely aware of this. So it's a very, very old discussion, but it's very important for us, especially in sensitive areas like hashkafa or gender or lines in terms of a community, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. How do we relate to all of these different other people? What's our perspective? Should we be judging them or not? How do we judge? You would think that the rabbis would encourage us not to judge, but they actually don't do that, as far as I could tell. It's not something that's... let's put it this way. It's something that happens, and they recognize that it happens all the time. I'll give you an example. There's a Mishnah in Masechet Shkolim, in the third chapter, in Perek Gimel Mishnah Beis, which tells you the following. let's say you are the Kohen, and you're responsible to go into, imagine behind that door was the treasury where they kept the Shkolim in the Beis HaMikdash. So that's where they took all the funds that had been collected. Everybody gives the machzis a shekel from all around the country. Everybody donates it, and they keep it in a safe behind that locked door. So you're responsible to go into that locked door and to take out whatever money is needed. There's different strata. There's the karbonos that use some of that money. Then there's extra from that money. So when you go into that locked door, you actually can't go in dressed the way that I am. The Mishnah tells us in Masechet Shkolim that you can't have any pockets. And not only that, well, these are good because my wife makes sure that I'm supposed to be up to the trendy dress, so now I don't have any cuffs. I used to have cuffs, but now the cuffs are all gone. Theoretically, the Gemara discusses that you can't have, the Mishnah discusses that you can't have cuffs. Why? Now, let's be honest. Baruch Hashem, I make a terrific salary from the kolel. I'm not looking for money from the Beis Hamikdash. I'm going to start stealing the money from the Rebbe. What am I, nuts? But it doesn't matter. Because the Mishnah says there's a principle called V'yisem Nikiyim. You should be clean. Your hands should be clean. Nobody should even suspect that something is going on. But what do you mean nobody should suspect? Who's going to suspect? The answer is everybody's judging. Everybody looks when I come out of there. So Chazal say, well, wait a second. If I become very wealthy, they're going to say, you know how he got wealthy? Because he took. And you know what happened if all of his stock crashed? If, God forbid, the person became poor, you know what they would say? You know why he became poor? Because he put his hand in the till, and the Rabbanu Shalom zapped him and took all his money away. So therefore, you should be careful always to act in a way that people, they won't have anything to judge you for. They won't suspect you. But you see that people are judging. And the Chazal are saying that you need to deal with that. Even Moshe Rabbeinu, the Pasuk says, V'hibitu acharei Moshe. So the Gemara in Kedushin, Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, says something crazy. It says, some say they looked after Moshe. V'hibitu. Hibitu means to look carefully, to look intentively. They used to look at him, so some say, L'shvach. They would say, wow, look at Moshe Rabbeinu. We keep watching him. It's amazing. Until he got to his house. Moshe Rabbeinu walked down the street. Everybody was like, you know, like the Gladys Kravitz. Everybody's out with the binoculars looking. He's going all the way back. Someone, Baruch Hashem. Someone got it. He gets to his house and everybody closes the windows. Everybody goes back to their business. But Manda Amar Leganai. Some said that the people looked at him with an evil eye. Moshe Rabbeinu, the man who had taken them out of Egypt, the man who had given them the Torah, the man who had sustained them in the desert. They're like, oh, you see that guy? He's living off our money. It's terrible. That guy's a disgrace. That's what the Gemara says about Moshe Rabbeinu. Unbelievable. So we're judging, and it's an old story. But the truth is, it's not just that people are judging. In a certain sense, a culture of judgment, and even me as an individual judging someone, maybe it's even suggested. Maybe it's recommended. The Gemara tells the following story. The Gemara says in Maseches Kiddushin, Daf Mem Tesamad Beis, this might happen. I haven't come across this in my own personal experience, but it might happen. A man says to a woman, they're sitting at a restaurant, here they are at shallots, and they're dating, you know, very seriously, and the girl has no idea, but in his jacket pocket, the guy pulls out a ring. He's got this little, you know, one of these bags. He keeps a bag in his pocket. Inside, he has a ring. He pulls out the ring, and he says to the girl in front of two people at the next bench, he says, Hare at mekudeshes li betabazu al menas she'ani tzadik. On the condition that I am a righteous person, that I am a tzadik. So it's very unusual that that would happen. I don't know if it's ever happened in the history of shallots, but it's even more unusual that somebody should say, Al menas she'ani tzadik, because who's to say whether you're a tzaddik? So the Gemara has an unbelievable comment. The Gemara says, let's say we know that person is a Rasha Gamor. They're absolutely an evildoer, no good for nothing, absolutely not. Now, why the girl is dating the gangster, I don't know. I can't tell you. But he's mamish good for nothing. So the Gemara says, you still have to be concerned. You have what we call Safek Kiddushin. Maybe there is Kiddushin here. So they're going to have to schlep them to the CRC Bez, and they're going to have to do a get. It's going to be a whole balagan if they want to break this off. Why? The guy's a total oisvarf. He's a mamash Rasha Gomor. The Gemara says, no, maybe he had a change of heart. Maybe he did tshuva. So here's the interesting thing about this Gemara. When they pull him into the Bezdin, or the girl, when she's looking at this guy across the table. Now, the assumption here is, by the way, that she took the ring. If she threw the ring away, so then you don't have to worry. She takes the ring. What is she thinking? Well, she's probably thinking, a lot of things. But she's probably thinking, well, the Rambam tells in Hilchos Tshuva, there are categories in Halacha. There's the category of a Tzaddik. There's a Rasha. There's a Beinoni. Well, I'm trying to think, well, where does this guy fit in? Is he a Tzaddik? Or is he a, well, how would you know? So you have to go back to the Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin, where the Rambam will tell you, these are the things, these are the violations for which somebody becomes a Tzaddik or a Rasha. Tzaddik and a Rasha are halachic legal terms. They appear in Hilchos Tshuva. They also appear in the context of testimony. So You have to know, if this happens to come up in your life, you have to know who is a tzaddik or a rasha. But even more than that, all right, so that's not so common. You're thinking, that how often does that happen? But there is a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah tells us in Perek Aleph, in the third Mishnah, Al tischaber l'rasha. Don't hang out. L'ischaber means to connect to. Don't go hanging around with people who are begeder. They are in the kalachi category of a rasha. It's a bad idea. So that means the truth is that I do need to pay attention to the people who I'm hanging with. And I need to look around and figure out, well, is this person, we're going to go for coffee tomorrow, wherever, for breakfast. Are they a tzaddik or a rasha? Al tischaber l'rasha. Don't hang out. Don't create this fellowship, this bond, this friendship with a rasha. So we need to know who's a tzaddik and who's a rasha. Here's where it gets even more sticky. The halacha says in Yoredeya, in Simen Kuf Yotes, that a person who is not themselves careful about a certain matter in halacha, they are not trusted, generally speaking, for somebody else. So for example, if I'm not scrupulous about where I eat dairy food, so then if someone comes to my home, they can't eat the dairy food in my kitchen because I'm not scrupulous, I'm not careful about whether I'm eating dairy, kosher or non-kosher. So now all of a sudden it gets a little more complicated. Wait a minute. So I need to know, I need to go around checking everybody who I'm going to eat at, whether or not they're scrupulous about A, B, C, and D. Moshe Feinstein was asked a question once, appears in the Shalos Tshuvos Igros Moshe, years and years ago, decades ago, about somebody who became observant, but his parents were, this was in Russia, were communist, and they didn't observe anything. So he had this serious question, could he eat in their house? So Moshe had to deal with that particular issue. But now you're talking about, we are definitely judging. We're judging those people, because when we get invited out for that Shabbos, I'm thinking to myself, well, wait a second. Did they observe the laws of Shabbos? It's tricky stuff. And then, here's what gets even better. And that is the mitzvah of tochacha. Tochacha means to prove something, to demonstrate something, or to, if you want to go extreme, to criticize or rebuke someone. So, the Gemara says in Maseches Erechin, Daf Tes Zayin Amud Beis, that there is a mitzvah to, if you see somebody doing something wrong, to rebuke them. And the Gemara says elsewhere that if you don't, it's a very serious thing based on the concept of Arvas, the Gemara in Shavuos, and Daf Lamed Amud Beis, the Gemara in Lamed Tes Amud Aleph, excuse me. V'chashlu ish ba'achiv, the concept that a person, Kol Yisrael Arevim, Zeh Bazeh, is said not so much in terms of, like, we like to think about Arvas, or mutual responsibility, as like this beautiful thing. We're all at like Havdalah, holding hands and arms and everything. We all care about each other. But the technical, the legal source for Arvas is actually in the context of a wrongdoing. And that if somebody else is doing something wrong, I'm held culpable for that, presuming that I could have some influence on them. So now, not only am I judging the people, I'm going around looking, wait a second. All right. You're doing that wrong. I'm going to take a little notes on my little notepad here so that I can call you Motzei Shabbos to tell you all the things that I saw you do or say that morning in shul, because I have the mitzvah of tochacha. Now, it is more complicated than that, because the Gemara tells us in Maseches Yevamos and Daf Samachei Amud Beis that it's not just a mitzvah to say rebuke to somebody. It's also a mitzvah not to rebuke someone who won't listen to you. That's also an important mitzvah. Mitzvah shelo lomar davar she'enu nishma. If you know they're not going to listen to you, don't start up with them. But this gets into like the weeds of a whole complicated question practically. So I would suggest, I humbly suggest, that we follow the words of that Gemara in Erechin, which are cited in the many Achronim, all the way until the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish points out that today, we don't know anybody who has the capacity to give rebuke to somebody else in the proper manner. Takes great skill, great sensitivity to give rebuke. So the Chazon Ish, who was not a lightweight in any regard, he said, you know what, let's leave it to the professionals. So I'm just pointing out here, if anybody walks out suggesting that they should, based on this shiur, go around judging people and then rebuking them, that's not what we're trying to say. But we see from this concept in halacha of tochacha that being aware of other people's shortcomings, it's a reality, and it's not just a fact, it's something that is encouraged. So we got to figure out, what does that mean? Like, for us, do I really have to spend my day sitting around? Well, I shouldn't be sitting around, stamazoi. But as I'm going through life, I'm taking mental notes of all the things that are happening around me in terms of judging other people. Sounds like yes. So I'd like to present in the short amount of time that we have today is that we should definitely be judging people all the time. Yes. For sure, great. Chana, you're upset. I didn't even get started yet. Give me a chance. But what I'd like to suggest is that we think about a few things before we do that. Before we judge people, when we judge people, and after we judge people. And perhaps these can lend us kind of some perspective on what is good judgment, both in terms of good judgment and good judgment. So before we judge somebody, we need to start with a Gemara in Maseches Bava Basra. The Gemara tells us at the beginning of Rus, Gemara Bava Basra's Tesvav Medbeis, Vayhi Bimei Shvot HaShoftim. It was in the days of the Shvot HaShoftim. How would you translate that?
The judge.
Right? The judges, it's like a tongue twister. The judges were judging. So the Gemara says you can read it a different way. It's not in the days that the judges were judging, but it was Vayhi Bimei. It was in the days Shifot. They were judging Hashoftim, the judges, because the people looked at the judges and they say, "You are criticizing us. You're criticizing us about something that's wrong with you. So don't tell us." The Gemara has this old Talmudic expression: "Don't tell us to take away the problem that we're struggling with. According to you, you have the same issue." You're getting up and you're telling me, you, the judge, are judging me and saying, you know what? I'm not being nice to my neighbor. Yeah, and last week I saw you run over their cat. Deliberately. With your lawnmower. I saw it. Vayhi bimei shvot hashoftim. The first thing we need to think about before we judge other people is this expression of the Gemara, of kshot atzmecha v'achar kach kshot achirin. You need to think about yourself first. Gesundheit, we should all... We're going to leave this year ready to judge everybody else. It's going to be awesome. But before that, the first prerequisite is going to be kshot atzmecha. Make sure that you judge yourself before you judge somebody else. Kshot atzmecha, the word kshot literally means to adorn, like makeup, like jewelry. Before you worry, the Talmudic expression means, before you worry about putting jewelry on somebody else, make sure you're wearing the jewelry yourself. That's the first thing. The second thing is that there is a beautiful teaching of the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh. This became a massive Hasidic teaching that everyone loves to talk about. And Shlomo Carlbach maybe was one of the people who made this most famous. It's a great story, famous story called the Schwarze Wolf, the Black Wolf, which we don't have time to talk about today because that would take up the rest of the shiur. But you should go online if you have a chance. Probably it's on YouTube somewhere. The story of the Schwarze Wolf. And what's the upshot of this story? Shlomo Carlbach points out, and it's the teaching of the Baal Shem Tov, that when you see somebody else who's mamish very ugly, it means there's something ugly about you. Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh says that the world is like a mirror. That when you see someone else doing something wrong, it's really a reflection on yourself. So there is a great Hasidic story. Again, this one appears in Dr. Abraham J. Tversky's collection of Hasidic stories called Nacha Stories. He quotes a story from the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh that he once saw a Jew not observing Shabbos, desecrating Shabbos. And the Baal Shem Tov then went home and he fasted. He fasted for days because he wanted to gain the Siyata Dishmaya, the presence of God in his life, that he could understand how he could see somebody else be Machal Shabbos. Because the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh understood that the world is like a mirror. So when I see the other person being Machal Shabbos, it must be a pagam in me. And they revealed to him in a dream, days later, the story goes, that he once saw the denigration of a Talmud Chacham, a great Torah scholar. And he didn't speak up, he was quiet. But since, in tradition, the Talmud Chacham, the tzaddik, the righteous person, in certain respects, in many Hasidic teachings, is akin to the Shabbos, so that's how the dream revealed to him. That's how he saw this person be Machal Shabbos. He needed to understand that he had done something wrong in his own life that caused him to see that. And that was the correlation. So So there's the kshot atzmacha v'achakach kshot achayim, but there's also the world is the mirror, that you see somebody else being mechal Shabbos, you need to look into yourself. And then the last point is, a Gemara in Kiddushin, a daf ayin amid beis, which is also a pretty intense comment, and that is, the Gemara has this expression, kol haposel b'mumo posel. The Gemara's context has to do with yichus, about lineage. So there's this discussion about somebody called somebody else a name. They said, oh, you're an Eved. You don't have the proper yichus, you're an Eved. The Gemara says, you know what? Go check it out. Check out the name caller. Not the name callee. Check out the name caller. And they checked out. It turns out there was something wrong with his yichus. We very often, I'm sure this is true not just spiritually but also psychologically, we have like these unconscious, subconscious realities that exist within us. So when we're attacking somebody else, we're really just projecting stuff that's going on for ourselves. So kol haposel b'mumo posel says, okay, you want to judge somebody else, you want to critique them, you have to be very careful, because if you're critiquing them, it's very likely that what you're really doing is just projecting something from yourself on somebody else. So I think these are the three things that we need to think about before we judge other people. But after this, we're judging. We're ready. Okay, so far, we got our prerequisites in line. Good. Any questions, comments, or observations? Would you mind if I take off my jacket before I melt? No? Okay, thank you. Every year, this is a big debate. I'm always sweating. Everybody else is always freezing. Yes?
What about Achei Gata Lemakom?
Okay, we'll get there. We'll get there. We haven't even started judging them yet. We haven't started judging. So we'll take up any other comments.
Yeah. I thought that the world is like a mirror meant, when I read this, I thought he meant that when it bothers you, it's in you, not when you see it. You said when you actually visually see something,
right,
it means it's in you. That's,
right.
That's not what I thought. I thought it's when it bothers you.
So if you take a look in Dr. Tversky's book, I think the chapter is called Like a Mirror, or The World is Like a Mirror. He develops this idea. It's called Not Just Stories. He develops this idea. And the truth is, we're saying it now in like a pedestrian way. It's a much deeper Kabbalistic idea that has to do with this idea also appears in the Bala Tanya, in Likutei Amarim, also in later in the Tanya. The idea of that the shorish of different, the spiritual energy of different things, that if you see it, it has some connection to you, which is for a longer discussion. Okay, you ready? Let's judge people. Okay, but the Mishnah Pirkei Avos gives us four perspectives, I think, on how we should judge people, and that's the series of sources that you have in front of you. These four Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos. It's interesting because the Rambam writes in his Hakdama to Pirush Mishnayos in one place that Pirkei Avos was written for judges. That's why it's in Seder Nezikin, in the book of Nezikin, because it's for judges. So it's interesting. Everybody learns Pirkei Avos because we're all judging all the time. So the first Mishnah that we have on this list is Perek Dalet Mishnah Ches, Rabbi Yishmael. So this Rabbi Yishmael, who are you, Omer? Rabbi Yishmael was the son of Rabbi Yossi. He was a friend of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. And he says, who are you, Omer, used to say, Al Tihi Don Yechidi. Do not be a judge who is solitary. Why? She'ein don yechidi ela echad. There is only one who judges alone. That's right. I was thinking of that. Every year I think about when you connect that Mishnah, Hadon yechidi levoi olam, in the Nusach, in the Yomino Roim. It's in V'chol Ma'aminim, for those who are keeping score. So what is this trying to say? So first of all, on the simple level, he's trying to say, judge with other people. You should gather others to get their insight when you judge somebody. But I think there's a deeper level that's being alluded to here. What does it mean in the Mishnah, She'ein don yechidi ela echad? What is echad? Who is echad? Right, Hashem. So we say Shema. We say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem echad. But what does it mean that Hashem is echad? So it means two things. It means that he is one, but also we believe part of our Ikari Emunah, the basics of our faith, is not just that God is one, but in the oneness of God, the unity of God. What do we say in Yigdal? Echad ve'en yachid ki yichudo. Ne'elam ve'gam ein sof la'achdu so. What does that mean? Ne'elam, it's hidden. And Ein Sof, there are no limits to Achdu So, to the Ichud, to the unity of God. It means that on some level, ultimately, when it all comes back to the source, everything is just an expression of godliness. Hashem is Echad, not just that He is one, but you could say, like, I guess I'm one person, but I'm not really one. I'm not one integrated person because I have two hands that are distinct from my arms. You could cut them apart, God forbid. And I have different components. But godliness, the Ribbono Shel Olam Ba'atzmo, whatever that means, and we can't really understand this idea, I certainly can't, but it means that Hashem Yisbarach is Echad, meaning He is everything at once. Meaning, for example, Mipi Elyon Lo Seitzei Hara'a V'Hatov. There's no such thing as good and bad. You know, the Gemara refers to sometimes to old mythology, the Greek mythology having to do with, you know, the light and dark, upper and lower. Because there are multiple gods. So there's the god of daytime and there's the god of nighttime. We say, no. In the bracha of Kriya Shema, when we start, we say, Yotzer Or Ubore Choshech, Oseh Shalom Uboreis HaKol, which is a play on what originally was, which was Uboreis HaRa. God is Echad. There's no good and bad, Kivyachol. Everything, all perspectives, everything is included in oneness. A rabbi, Rabbi Benjamin Yudin, in Fairlawn, he used to point out that that's why when you say Shema, you cover your eyes. Because sometimes it's difficult when we open our eyes to see the Echad, the oneness. We see brokenness. We see goodness here and we see evil there. So we cover our eyes. But we believe that Hashem is Echad. So now, with this, I can understand much deeper what it means, Al Tehi Dan Yechidi. Because if Achdus of the Ribbono Shel Olam means it incorporates everything, so that means there isn't just one perspective. All the perspectives are included in the Ribbono Shel Olam. For example, the Gemara tells us that Talmidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom Ba'olam. The sages increase shalom, peace in the world. Anybody here ever see a Beis Medrash? Anybody ever see two rabbis talking to each other and learning? Doesn't seem like there's a lot of peace going on over there. That doesn't look peaceful at all. So Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, in the Ein Ayah, in his commentary on the Agadot and Maseches Brachos, he points out that shalom means completeness. So the reason why Talmidei Chachamim are marbim shalom, they increase shalom, fullness, like the word shalem, fullness, wholeness, is because they keep bringing out more and more perspectives. You bring multiple perspectives to the table and you create shleimus, because it's not one perspective. There are multiple. There are shivim panim l'Torah. So when you get more rabbis to the table arguing and sharing more perspectives in Torah, so that's shalom. What's the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What don't we say? Let's say I'm walking to shul in the morning. Before davening, I don't say shalom aleichem, because I don't greet somebody with the name of Hashem, because Hashem's name is Shalom. It's like Echad. It's the incorporation of all perspectives. So Al Tihi Don Yechidi, because Ein Don Yechidi Elo Echad. Only the Ribbono Shel Olam is able, when he looks at a circumstance, whatever this means, Kaviyachol, he sees it from every single perspective on the wheel. We might only see it from one, or two, or three. But the Ribbono Shel Olam sees it Mibchinat Echad. All the perspectives, the things that seem good and the things that don't seem good. The Gemara tells in Maseches Erev and Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim Chayim. Shalom of Talmidei Chachamim means there are multiple perspectives. Now, there are shivim panim la-Torah, there are 70 faces of Torah, so you could be one of 70. You don't want to be 71, you certainly don't want to be 72 or 75, but it's not only one way. So when we're looking at people and we're judging them, because we're supposed to, of course, be judging them all the time, we have to be careful. Al tihi dan yechidi. Don't look at them only from one perspective, because the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't. He is Echad. He looks at them from all the perspectives in an integrated way. That's why, perhaps, the Navi describes there are 13 gates of Yerushalayim going to the Beis HaMikdash. So there's an old Lubavitch Siddur, the commentary, like a beginning of the 18th century, an old commentary on the Chabad, the Siddur of the Arizal, who points out the reason why there are 13 gates is because there are 13 ways of davening. 13 nuschos hatfilah, and you pick your nusach hatfilah based on the shevet that you're from. So if you're from the tribe of Reuven, you daven with a Siddur from Reuven. If you're from the tribe of Dan, you daven with a Dan. It's Yehuda v'chule v'chule. So why is there a 13th gate? because there is a miscellaneous tribe. Meaning, let's say you don't know what tribe you're from, or you're a convert, or whatever. You don't know where you go, so you go with the 13th tribe. Now, the punchline from this, I think it's called the Shahar Yichud, this old Lubavitch commentary, is that the sitter of the Nusach Ari, that's the 13th tribe. So if anybody here doesn't know, you should daven Nusach Ari. He says, the Arizal said this is the 13th tribe. Okay. Good. For all the Chabatskas out there, you can keep davening Nusach Ari. Great. But the point is that there's not one gate to the Ribono Shel Olam. There's not one tribe. So ain don yechidi elo echad. The first thing when we judge other people is we need to make sure, before we come to a conclusion, that we have a lot of different perspectives, not just one. That's number one. Second Mishnah. Mishnah tells us in Perkei Avos, first Mishnah, Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, they said, Hevu mesunim bedin. Take your time when you judge. Be patient. Don't rush. There is a guy, he's a retired professor from Princeton. He's a Nobel winner, although his Nobel Prize was in economics, but he's a psychologist. His name is Daniel Kahneman. He's a relative of the Panovizhe Rav. So Daniel Kahneman is like this big gone in psychology, and he wrote a book called Thinking Fast and Slow, which Rabbi Ehrenfeld recommended to me, and of course I never took the time to read it, but I did see the New York Times book review, so at least I got the Tamsis HaDvarim, and they have an amazing thing they quote from this book, a study that they did, even with students experts in probability. They said they did what they called the Linda test. The Linda test goes like this. You ask a person, tell me, what do you think about this woman, Linda? She was a very active person growing up. She was a college student, active in the civil rights movement, and later in life was very active in women's causes and all kinds of women's rights demonstrations and marches. So what's more probable, that Linda is a bank teller or a bank teller and a feminist activist? So everybody says, 85% of the people, including the researchers, said B, of course. And Kahneman and his fellow researchers said, no. One second. Bank teller, that's one. But now feminist, you've actually decreased the probability of her being a bank teller, or by definition, anytime you add a qualification, you have decreased the probability of that person. You know for sure, right, based on whatever probability, that she's a bank teller. But now you've just added another variable. Maybe she is or maybe she isn't a feminist activist today. So he says, what's going on here? Why does everyone fail the Linda test? He says, it's very simple. We have two modes of thinking. System number one is like the immediate, fast response, you know, paint the picture quickly in your mind. Knee-jerk reaction. Maybe this is like the Malcolm Gladwell blink. Very into this Mahalach, Malcolm Gladwell. You know, snap judgment type of thing. And then number two is more like process and focus and think, but number two, we get a little bit lazy sometimes. So sometimes we just kind of like go with number one. We associate, we just kind of like whatever. So the reason that we're making this decision about the probability, even though it makes mathematically makes zero sense, is because our snap judgment, number one, keeps telling us in the back of our mind, oh, that stuff, that's part of our decision-making process. Even though when the question of probability comes up, it's not. It's a math question. But it doesn't matter because our snap judgment, our system number one, tells us in our mind, oh, let's associate. She was active in feminist movements back then, so Linda, she must be an active feminist. Even though it doesn't make any sense mathematically. Because our minds, when we're thinking fast, sometimes make irrational decisions. So we go to judge people. When we make snap judgments about them, we may be accurate, we may be blink, we may be spot on, but we may not. We may be irrational, and we may be coloring our decisions because we're making a snap judgment. So instead of going with the gut reaction number one, that's likely irrational, or being lazy in our number two and just saying, yeah, whatever he said. That's what our mind is thinking, you know, half the brain says to the other, whatever that is, fine. We need to be, says the Mishnah, mesunim badin. We need to be patient. It means we need to really think it through carefully. So as we're judging somebody, number one, we're getting input from other people. And number two, we're being very careful and thoughtful about how we assess the situation. Let's keep going. Number three. Perkei Avos, Beis Hei. famous statement of Hillel HaZaken, "Va'al tadin es chavercha ad shetagia lemekomo." Don't judge that person until you reach their place. So the Gemara says, Maseches Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Beis, there was a great rabbinic sage. His name was Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi was actually one of the redactors, the editors of the Talmud. He lived in the end of the 5th century. So he's kind of like the closer of the Gemara. Very, very important personality. So Rav Ashi was giving a shiur, and he says, tomorrow we're going to learn a little bit more about this topic in Tanakh, and he's a biblical figure. We'll call him our brother Menashe. Our brother Menashe. Well, you're all thinking, whew, that's a tough topic, Menashe. He was incredibly wicked. He may have been one of the worst kings of Israel ever. Right? There's actually, it's not so clear if you line up Divrei Hayamim and Sefer Melachim, who was worse? Did he do tshuva? Whatever it is, the bottom line is, on the judgment scale of things, we could all raise our hands and say, Menashe, he was a Rasha. Great. No problem. We can get Dan Yechidi out of the way. We can get Mesunim Adin. No problem. Menashe, biblically, he's a Rasha. The Navi tells you. You don't need any better than that. And the Gemara says that night, Menashe appeared to him in a dream. And he says, excuse me, buddy. I'm not your brother, all right? I'm not your pal. Tell me, when you make hamotzi, where do you cut the bread? And Rav Ashi says, well, I don't know. I didn't learn that halacha. He's like, really? What kind of amaretz are you? I know where to cut the bread. I know every sif cut in the Shulchan Aruch, including where to cut the bread. So don't call me your brother. And then he says, listen here. If you would have lived when I lived, where I lived, we would have both been running to worship idols, and you would have picked up the bottoms of your pants and ran ahead of me in line to get there before me. So don't tell me that we're buddies. Says the Gemara, Al todin es chavercha ad shetagia lemekomo. Don't judge other people until you understand their context. But I think there's even a deeper level, maybe you could suggest, on this line. And it comes actually from a halachic context. Imagine we didn't have an Eruv. And imagine there was a Rishus HaRabim, a public thoroughfare, a public domain. So it's a very big question whether or not we have a Rishus HaRabim here in Chicago. Let's assume that we don't, because if we did, we probably wouldn't make an Eruv, or at least the Eruv that we have. But let's say we went to a place that had a Rishus HaRabim, an actual public domain. And I took something from a private domain. Let's say I took a paper airplane and I threw it from a private domain into the public domain. So I did an Akira, I picked it up, and then I did a Hanacha, I threw it, and it landed in the public domain. That is a biblical violation of Hotzah, of carrying. I have to take it from a private domain to a public domain. Okay, I picked it up from the floor here, I put it down on the floor over there. The Gemara says in Shabbos, on Daf Kuf Beis and Aleph, and there's a parallel sugya in Erevin, Daf Tzadites, what happens if I take a baseball and I have a dog, my friendly retriever? So I have the following game. I have the baseball. I'm in Rishus HaYachid, in the private domain. I throw the baseball into Rishus HaRabim, into the public domain, and the dog catches the ball in his mouth. Have I violated the Isser of Hotzah, of carrying out? Well, on the one hand, I did take something from a private domain and put it in a public domain. However, can you really call the mouth of the dog a public domain? It's standing in the public domain, but the Gemara assumes that you need a makom dalet al dalet. You have to have a space that's 4 tefachim by 4 tefachim. It has to have some space. Imagine if it stopped and landed on the top of a cell phone tower. The Gemara says that's not really resting in the public domain. It's so precariously. That's not called resting. You're not chayav for that. But the Gemara says, in this case, you are chayav. You are liable. Because when I picked up the ball and I threw it to my dog, what was my intent? My intent was that the dog should catch it. So my machshava, my intent, makes it that the dog's mouth is a makom chashuv. It is a significant place. And therefore, it's as if it was on the ground. So the Gemara's klal is machshavto, in your mind, mashvilei makom. It's now a place. A dog's mouth, objectively, is not a place. But if I say it's a place, it's a place. Because in my mind, it's a place. Al Tadin es Chavercha ad Shetagil Makomo may not just be spatially S-P-A-T, not like spatial Shalashudis in the Shtibel. Spatial, S-P-A-T. It's not just a place, a geographic location. It's also Machshavto Mashvile Makom. In your mind, you can create a place. You create places in your mind. So Al Tadin es Chavercha ad Shetagil Makomo, don't judge somebody else. When you're judging them, make sure you know exactly what's going on in their mind. What kind of house they grew up in. What their parents were like, if they had parents. What kind of experiences they had. What were their teachers like. All the different things that may be going on in that person's mind. When they cut me off at the, wherever we're driving over here, I'm going to start judging them, of course. I'm going to go through all the litany of things. But maybe there's something going on in their mind. Maybe they didn't actually even see me. Maybe they're having such a raw day that they can't... Maybe they're rushing to an emergency. I don't know. What's in their mind? Ad shetagi al makomo. And finally, Yehoshua ben Prachya, number 4, in Mishnah Pirkei Avos, in the 6th Mishnah Perek Aleph. Yehoshua ben Prachya says, Aseh lecha rav, kenei lecha chaver, not for today, vehevidon eskol ha'adam lekapskos. You need to judge people favorably. The Gemara in Shavuos and Daf Lamed Amud Aleph says there is a biblical requirement, a pasuk, betzedek tishpot amisecha, and it does not just refer, as the Rambam says in the Sefer Mitzvos, it does not just refer to judges to make sure that you hear out the cases equally between two parties. It also means each one of us, all of us, betzedek tishpot amisecha, we should give people the benefit of the doubt, to judge them favorably when it's not so clear. Now, this is not an easy thing to do. It's a difficult thing to do. But it's a mitzvah d'oraisa. It's absolutely required. It's not just some like nice idea that it's an Aesop's fable that you take it or leave it. It's a chiyuv. It's an obligation. Now, there's a big debate among the Rishonim. If you look in the Pirush HaMishnayos and the Rambam on this Mishnah, who do you have to judge favorably? Is it a Tzadik Gamor? Is it Beinoni? If you look at Rabbeinu Bachaya, it sounds like every person, even the most wicked person, you have to judge them favorably. Because, as Rav Shlomo Carlbach used to say in a different context, often, you never know. Do you really know what's going on? There is a website, they used to publish these things, I think, and then it became a book, and now Or Sameach has a website called ohr.edu, or.edu, and they have a whole section in there on Dan Lakavskhus stories. Like, making sure you know the whole stories. They have a great maisa there about somebody who was asking someone else about a recommendation for a photographer. So the person who was asked for the recommendation, said, well, I'm not sure about that person. They said, why not? I thought they're an excellent photographer. They said, well, you know, I have a friend who was at a bar mitzvah recently where they arrived halfway through the simcha. So the person who was asking for the recommendation said, you know, I'm not going to start up with somebody who, you know, they arrived halfway through the simcha. That's the dumbest thing I ever heard. I need a photographer at the beginning. So it happens to be that this person bumped into the person from that simcha. Anyway, you can see that the details over there. Bumped into the person who knows the photographer, and the photographer says, "Oh my gosh, what a crazy story! You have to hear this." Says, "I was sitting at home, sipping my coffee at my kitchen table, and I get a frantic call at 8:30 at night from some balabas somewhere." Who's calling me saying, my photographer didn't show to my bar mitzvah and I'm an hour into the simcha, could you please come? So he says, I picked up my camera, I put down my coffee, I raced over to this guy's simcha while I'm putting on my suspenders, and now everybody says, this is the photographer who came an hour late to the simcha. Al Tadin es Chavercha ad Shetagia Hevidon es Kol Adam Lekav Zchus. You never know why that person ended up late. I still remember, I think about this sometimes. We had, when we were living in Israel, we were first married, so Nechama had complications, and we had a doctor who's now, I think, he's still practicing in Shari Tzedek. His name is Dr. Rabinovich, Tzadik Gomer. So she had some particular issues, and she once called the office, and she got a call back like 2 hours later, from Dr. Rabinovich himself. And Rabinovich said to her, he said, "I'm sorry I didn't get back to you sooner. I was just with my mother who just died." And we were like, "Why are you calling us?" So you could say, "I can't believe the guy didn't get back to me for 2 whole hours," which, as young married Americans, first pregnant in Israel, of course, that's what you're going to say. "Can't believe the guy didn't get back to me for 2 hours. He was with his dying mother. And yet he still called us back, tzaddik." But, hevidonis kol adam l'kaf schus, do we really know what's going on the other hand, on the other side? So to summarize, when we go through judging people, we need to take into consideration all the different perspectives. Al tehidon yechidi. We need to be patient and think it through. Number 3, we need to really understand where that person is coming from. And number 4, we have to be danas kala adam lekaf schus. And after all of that, now we're finished judging them, we need to think about one concluding thought. And that is when we're finished judging them. So how do we judge them? Favorably or unfavorably? So the Gemara tells in Maseches Shabbos, Daf Kuf Chav Zayin Amud Beis, Hadon chaveru lekaf schus, danan oso luschus. If you judge somebody else positively, the Ribbono Shel Olam will judge you positively. There's an important teaching from the Baal Shem Tov, based on the pasuk in Tehillim, Hashem Tzilcha al Yad Yeminecha. God is your tzeil. What is tzeil?
Shadow.
Right? It could be shade, and that's, I think, the way most people would immediately translate it. Hashem is your shade. He's the protective cover. But the other way to translate it is, Hashem is your shadow. So, if you could see on the floor, I have 5 fingers. When I move my 5 fingers, the 5 fingers on the floor move. The Ribbono Shel Olam is like our shadow. So the way that we judge other people, that's exactly the way He is going to judge us. When we move our fingers, that's the way He's going to move His. So once we're finished passing judgment on that person, we need to remember, okay, today is, you know, Tammuz, I forget exactly what day it is. Guess what? In about 2 months or 3 months, we're going to be standing before Him, Kibnei Maron, being scrutinized. And so the answer is how to deal with that. We can write our own script. Chosam Yad Kol Adam Bo. We write the story before it happens. Because if we judge other people Latov, so the Ribbono Shel Olam will look at us and say, yeah, we'll also judge us Latov. And if not, so maybe the other way. So when we start our journey, we go back to the beginning and we think about the complexity. And I'm speaking to myself, you know, it sounds corny, but it's true. In thinking about this topic, as someone suggested it to me, in thinking about this topic, I realized how challenging it is and how much we need to go back to these words of Chazal and to internalize them, because it's easy to forget about them and to speak to myself as well as I was preparing. But living in this complex world with the vast myriad of challenges that people have out there, understanding some of these guiding principles about judging others can help us navigate when we deal with those difficult questions. And hopefully, through this process, we will be able to judge everybody the way the Ribbono Shel Olam expects. I thank you all for listening. Thank you for coming. Have a great day.